Good day to you, good morning to you, in fact, good evening to you, whenever you are listening to Soundtrack, and welcome along. Thank you so much for choosing to join us for another week of the podcast. Thank you for your feedback as well. I love when you get in touch, whether that's you've enjoyed a specific episode or if you've just discovered us. So if you are a new listener, welcome along. We are very glad to have you with us along for the ride, and I hope you enjoy diving into our rather extensive library now of guests on the podcast. And our latest guest on Soundtrackin', well, I should say guests, are writer-director Julie Taymor and her partner, both romantically and creatively, composer Elliot Goldenthal. Julie and Elliot join me to discuss The Glorias, a remarkable film about the life of journalist and activist Gloria Steinem, with different actors playing her in various phases of her life. It's a device that allows Julie all manner of scope for narrative fun and games and elicits fine performances from leading ladies Julianne Moore, Alicia Vikander and Ryan Keira Armstrong. Plenty more on The Gloria shortly. First, a word from our dear friends at Grass & Co. If you are a regular listener to Soundtrackin', you might have heard me talking about this brand quite a bit. That's because I'm a genuine fan of their products. And I wanted to clear a few things up for some of you who might not be aware of what CBD is and its benefits. CBD stands for, I never quite know how to say this, cannabidiol, which is a natural extract of the hemp plant, which is both legal and non-intoxicating. Grass & Co. are a premium CBD range of the finest quality, sustainably sourced and blended with complementary botanical ingredients like chamomile, ginger, turmeric and ashwagandha, which not only make it taste lovely, but help relax your mind and soothe your body. Why do I use it? Well, to be frank, it just makes my day a bit easier. I find it helps with anxiety, stress, and sleeping. So, after hearing all that, maybe now's the time for you to give CBD a go. And if so, well, I can highly personally recommend Grass & Co. products. Now, they've got three ranges: Calm, Rest, and Ease. I'm particularly fond of the Calm range, which also comes with lovely complementary products like aromatherapy candles, pillow spray, or something that I think is great for muscle issues, CBD balm. They're all there to help you with your daily routine, bringing a touch of tranquility to whatever lays ahead for you. Grass & Co. CBD oils contain no trace of THC. All the CBD products are totally legal to buy, consume and supply in the UK. Interested? Then find your calm with 25% off plus free shipping at www.grassandco.com/sound. That's grassandco.com/sound. All you need to do is use the discount code SOUND at checkout to claim your 25% off the Grass & Co. Calm, Ease and Rest CBD range. Visit www.grassandco.com/sound and use the discount code at checkout to claim your 25% off the entire Grass & Co. range. And so, to Julie and Elliot. And we begin with one of his cues from The Glorias, Leo's Days. Thanks and congratulations on The Glorias. What a fantastic and just a really interesting journey that I felt like I went on with this character. I guess the place I want to start with was in terms of what was the process of coming up with how the film would look and this kind of brilliant way of depicting her life through these generations, almost through these different women and young women playing her.
Well, as you know, it's 80 years of this woman's life. So yeah. From age about 6 to 86. And I knew I couldn't do it with one Gloria, so why not do it with four or even five? So we, you know, when I was creating the script with Sarah, with the other writer, the idea was that we would have these actresses, these four actresses. But for me, the real hook into how to do it was the bus out of time. So we have in black and white this Greyhound bus, which is the archetypal vehicle in America for a journey, for the life on the road, my life on the road, which is the book upon which this movie is based. And on that bus, the Glorias then, the various Glorias can talk to each other. They can commiserate, they can cajole, they can accuse, they can laugh, they can, you know, be either very alone or very together. Yeah. And so that was the glue. And that was the glue, the interstitial binding between all of the various places and scenes, because there's over 100 locations and 150 speaking characters. And it's from India to all over America in all these decades. Yeah. So that was the hook. It was sort of an ideograph. What is the kind of abstraction of travel where she's forever going to the next protest, the next march, the next lecture, the next, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's such a fascinating concept, just as a human, to put yourself in the position of being able to either talk to your younger self or your future self. I love that notion. You know, it's not necessarily what would I do differently, but it's about having a conversation about it and talking about the decisions you did make or that you plan to make or you hope to make.
And then there's one other thing, which is that the different Glorias can actually enter each other's scenes. So, for instance, the taxi ride where Alicia Vikander is between Saul Bellow and Gay Talese, these two journalists who really talk right over her.
Yeah.
As a 30-year-old new journalist, she didn't even know what to say. She was so shocked at how rude. But then I could replace her with the Julianne Moore Gloria, who would really have a retort with a humor. Gloria Steinem is an incredibly funny woman and is never aggressively critical. She finds humorous, witty ways to make her criticisms or to give her answers to questions.
I mean, I went down when we see the real Gloria at the end of the film as well. It's such a beautiful moment as well. And then I went down a complete rabbit hole of watching the most recent footage of her and just, God, the spark she still throws out with her conversations and how considered she is with her answers to questions and stuff. It's absolutely inspiring. And I've loved learning more about her life through your film. It was so great.
Yeah, her childhood is astounding. What made her an activist? What made her? And understanding why, for the most part, she didn't marry and she didn't have children because she became the mother to her mother. She is extremely vital even today. But I think some of her phrases really just tell us a lot. Like when Hillary Clinton lost, I remember that night at the house of Samantha Power, who was the ambassador to the UN, and there were 40 female ambassadors from all over the world there, absolutely crestfallen that this had happened. We all were.
Yeah.
And Gloria's words at the end of the evening, well, now we have to look for the upside of the downside. And she lives that way. She lives with an unbelievably positive outlook on darkness. And she just keeps going.
When you were writing it, did you know who your Glorias were going to be? Did you write specifically with people in mind, or was that the process once the script was written in?
Well, I know the only one who was attached early was Julianne Moore. Yes, I had to know who was going to play the kind of main Gloria that people think of as Gloria, which is post Ms. Magazine. You know, there's no documentary footage of the younger Glorias, but there is a lot of material about once she became famous. So she attached herself to, luckily we had her from the get-go and raised the money with that and wrote the script with that in mind. And then I looked for the Alicia Vikander Gloria, you know, which was interesting because she's never played a full-out American before.
It works.
It works. And her accent is particular because it's also Gloria Steinem's accent, not just an American.
Yeah. Ellie, where did you start with the music as well? Because as Julia says, you kind of, you know, you transcend generations, you transcend countries around the world, but also there's this wonderful mix of score cues, but also, you know, existing music, Dave Pike and you know, various other kind of pieces of music that are used within the film. What were the conversations you had about what the film needed to sound like?
Well, it's an ongoing process in terms of conversations and back and forth and trial and error. Very early on, I thought about what could be a binding unit, something that I can play in practically every period. Mm. That period is no time. That period is the bus that travels throughout different sections chronologically of Gloria's life. So roughly from the 1960s to present, it was one constant that's through the ethers, through the air, is the sound of amplified guitar.
Yeah.
That particular sound, I don't know if you ever had the experience, many of us do, going to a sound check when you just hear a solo, a guitar not performing, in front of an audience, and they play, and there's something about the solo quality about it. And then maybe that musician, him on her or her, is working out something personal in their head. So it has a very particular experience that you don't hear on in a concert setting. So I thought about that intimate guitar that weaves throughout the 1940s and 50s and until present. Also, externally, there's a mishmash of time. So the 1930s is represented with a very hot club of France sound on acoustic guitar. Sometimes it's a string quartet. Sometimes it's an Afro-American style of music with very jagged and very avant-garde in the 1960s, represented by many musicians in Chicago, as well as John Coltrane, Ornette Coleman, as well as warmer jazz-inspired sounds. In the 60s felt to me like it had a kind of soul funk quality in the streets with Bella Abzug. things, as well as the thread of the Bus Out of Time guitar, is the major backbone for the piece. With one other element, the sense of noble music that you hear in movies, I held off on that. I held off until the conventions, the big, Miami convention, the Houston convention, the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. So it had that ennobling music for ideas of equality and ERA, et cetera, had time to grow with the character of Gloria.
There was also, I wasn't sure whether it was an existing piece of music or a composition for the film, but I wrote it down as the Wizard of Oz scene in the film with the Macbeth quote. And right.
that was a composition originally.
That is so incredible. Oh, my God.
Well, Julie's going to start to explain it.
Well, no, I mean, it is an homage to the Wizard of Oz, but in fact, that music isn't as powerful for our film as original music by Elliott. And it has humor and it has the dizzying, and it's probably one of the largest orchestral works. But it's got such a sense of humor and,
yeah.
And I love that because I really want that section to have irony and wit. It's not meant to be a ball buster or anything. It's there for fun. It's her inner imaginings of what do you say when a guy says something as stupid as that interviewer said. Yeah. And I play with all the witch bitch stuff, you know, all of them.
It's great.
For a woman who either a woman of power or a woman doesn't give the man exactly what he expects or wants. Mm-hmm. They're interchangeable, those words. So I did a spin-off of what that means, of what that could possibly be with the tornado. And
it's really, really good. I love the kind of abstract elements. I think they just work so brilliantly because they're almost a kind of like an inner look inside to her as a character, almost in a way, in terms of how she is internalizing the situation that she's faced with or what's going on around her. I loved it.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite pieces of music that Elliott did is for the treadmill. I love the treadmill. But the treadmill, these are some of these, there's sort of three levels of reality in the film. There is the normal dramatic actors acting drama and periods and places and time. Then, of course, there is the extraordinary. We have really great documentary footage because you just can't replace that. You can't. We can't do a march on Washington in 1963, nor the women's march. The conference in Houston. The real thing is better than a dramatic version. Even the real Phyllis Schlafly to me is better than seeing an actor act Phyllis Schlafly. So I also did not just on the bus, but in these segments, 7 or 8 of these segments, I went into much more of a surreal experience of a moment. And sometimes it's very hard in a movie that's this expansive to where do you go from the moment where she's in, for instance, the taxi screaming at the racist taxi driver in New York. And the next scene is she's in India at a book signing 10 years later. You know, it's like, oh, how do you make that edit? So these surreal moments sometimes, again, were the binding, helped with that binding. And the energy that Elliot wrote in the music coming off of her anger is the first time we actually see her screaming at somebody when she gets out of that taxi and slams the door. And I just took the one word that I had read in one of her books later, which was that part of her life, she felt like she was on a treadmill. And that's what happens to me, even with Shakespeare, you know, a word like that, the whole scene is then Gloria Steinem on a treadmill. And then Elliot created this extraordinary music that also helped segue into this peaceful book signing where she's gathered her whole life, all of the highs and lows, into a moment of understanding how that is a great thing for her, that it culminated in this book, My Life on the Road. So I think between us, we work very closely together on that. How long is that? About a minute or less?
About a minute.
Yeah.
45 seconds.
Yeah. We're heightening everything.
Where does that start for you, Elliot, when those conversations have been had, you know, the idea of the treadmill and then also that kind of Wizard of Oz thing? Where's the starting point for you in terms of what you're creating and how it's going to marry the emotion and the performance?
Well, it starts with a physical response. In the Wizard of Oz thing, the sense of spinning was very important. I should be spinning this way or that way. counterclockwise spinning of the tornadoes and water going down the drains if you're on the northern hemisphere. This spinning is also in a lot of dances throughout the world, particularly a tarantella in Italy. It was trying to extricate to get rid of the venom inside you that you have bottled up, and the bite of the tarantula, trying to get the poison out of you. So they spin and spin and wild, and the motion of the spinning is very similar to the tornado circular movement. So I picked on that and tried to make it a kind of a ride that you can't stop. You know, it's a motion that you can't just grab onto and say, come on, I want to get off. You can't get off. We'll be right back. And the other one, the treadmill, the guitar comes back, this time in a big amplified stadium rock kind of solo, but accompanied with a string quartet. And the string quartet is four individuals that has a singular voice, and that it's a kind of a thing in violin playing, down bows. And down bows is a very, very violent, very stinging. And that you can feel the slings and arrows of constant traveling that Gloria went through, through all life, and the crap she put up with men, et cetera, et cetera. And you can feel that, as well as a kind of slightly triumphant, slightly rising above the top guitar, amplified guitar solo, rising above that.
Did you consider, both in terms of the score and also the choices of needle drops within the film, of what Gloria's choices of music were, you know, in life, and her likes and dislikes when it came to music? Was that something that you kind of looked into at all, in terms of, you know, what she was into and what she listened to? I watched an old interview with her, actually. I think it was like an Oprah interview, and they were talking about music. And it was really interesting.
What did she say?
I can't remember who she referenced, but it was obviously an old artist that I wasn't really familiar with. And Oprah was like, "Whoa, you're going way back there," sort of thing. But it was quite interesting that her first kind of go-to. It made me think. I wonder if that's because that song reminds her of a time, or whether it's because it's the actual piece of music that she remembers. I was kind of fascinated by that. But, you know, whether it's like the Count Basie Orchestra choice for that beautiful tap dancing scene in the barbershop and things like that, I just wondered whether they had a connection specifically.
Yeah, the scene in the barbershop, she told me that. It's not in any documentary or any book.
Amazing.
She said they would play race records. That's what they were called. So we chose the piece of music for the tap dance. But it was definitely the kind of music that she loved at the time. She loved Hollywood movies, and she, for her birthday, her 50th birthday, actually, Bette Midler sang at her 50th birthday. The original Bette Midler sang. So
wow.
For a moment, we thought, well, let's get Bette playing Bella, but let's
That's
get
amazing.
Bette's daughter, who looks exactly like Bette, to lip sync. That idea went nowhere. I didn't bother with it. But, you know, she loved all kinds of music. She's just a completely, yeah, I don't think there's anything that's
It's mainly like a room. You see a certain light and a certain darkness. It's the musical zeitgeist we put her into each time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the funk music, soul music in New York, or the jazzy music on the jukebox in the beginning with her father.
Yeah, so love that. I love that so much. When they get the umbrellas with the jukebox is just the cutest thing ever. It's well, just, also, when you pull back and you see what it is, you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. I love these two.
And the sound of the music is very, very reminiscent of the 1930s, although it's composed. But it's also handmade. You know, you can have three musicians playing that in a small room somewhere in Toledo, Ohio, you know?
The other thing is that that particular melody is heard throughout the movie. And in particular, at her 50th birthday, he took the same melody and made it into a, what do you call that?
Romantic sultry, jazz.
When she's dancing with the two men. Yeah. The only time she's dancing with these two men. But because the real love story in this movie is, that kind of love story is really Gloria and her father, Leo. Mm. You know, that was the one man who was the major love of her. She had many great boyfriends, and she did marry David Bale, Christian's father. But I think the one that really taught her how to be friends with these men, even after she split up with them, is Leo Steinem.
Yeah.
So Elliot was able to take a few of these beautiful themes and change the quality of the orchestration to fit the scene or the era.
Find the world word boyfriends and Gloria's. In the movie, Gloria points out there was mini marriages.
Yeah, I love that.
The mini marriages.
Yeah.
I like that.
I love her, that interview. It's so great, you know.
I've got a particular friend that I'm going to start asking her to use that phrase from now on when she refers to her relationships, mini marriages. That's the way it's great. I like it a lot. It's good.
Yeah, she spent one time with one person for a while, and then
moved on. Listen, before we run out of time, I hope you don't mind. I just really love to mention Frida quickly, if that's all right, because I mean, do not an injustice by saying mention it quickly, but you know, another great example actually of where you've done this fantastic thing with given us your interpretation of the life of a wonderful woman, and a wonderful woman who made a difference and still continues to make a difference, I think, as well, in so many ways. What are your memories of that film?
I love that score so much. I mean, of course, it won the Academy Award, so I'm very proud that it was on a film I directed. Great time making the film, except in post-production with Harvey Weinstein, but there's been plenty written about that. I mean, he was a monster and we had to struggle a lot, but we ended up putting the movie out that we wanted to put out. So I have no feeling that the audience didn't get to see the director's final cut. That is my cut. I had to sneak it by, but it is my cut. Maybe there was one little teeny scene that I wish I hadn't cut, but it wouldn't change the movie that much. And Salma was astounding. She went through a lot of pressure and she hid a lot of it. Yeah. But we had a great time because we adore Mexico and we work with Rodrigo Prieto, who's the same DP who did The Glorias. And now he does all of Martin Scorsese and he's the Iñárritu, you know, did a lot of Iñárritu. So we had an amazing time in Mexico making this film and really feel proud about it. I love the cast in that movie as well. It's an amazing cast.
Yeah, it was one of my films that I watched in lockdown that was a savior, to be honest, in terms of just escaping to that world for a couple of hours. It was absolutely wonderful to watch that film again. It'd been a while since I watched it, so it was. And then when I was like realized I was coming to chat, just like, I've got to ask them about Frida.
Oh, and Frida had those paintings coming alive. Mm-hmm. There were six or seven, and I did model these surreal supernatural moments in The Glorias after that, because I hate when movies just stick a camera and try to show you what is the exterior. The whole point of being an artist is that you get a different perspective, that you can put the camera anywhere, and also that you can put it into the imagination of the main characters. You know, that's what you want to do, is visualize, physicalize what's going on in the interior landscape. So Frida, I did that with Titus as well. I don't know if you ever saw Titus with Anthony Hopkins, but
yeah,
that's a nice scary one.
Oh, yeah, scary one, yeah. Elliot, what about your Oscar-winning score for Frida? It just sounds so luxurious and fun to have made. Was her world easy to create sonically? Was that story easy to create sonically?
Well, the word I was looking for is intimacy. Intimacy. For example, you can be an incredible intimacy with sadness, with political thoughts, et cetera, and she was injured very seriously. So spending so much time alone in bed under painkillers, drugs, and medications, I felt like something had to be as tangible and intimate that you can invite on your pillow to serenade you, yeah. You know? And this sometimes is solo instruments playing the most personal things, that, you know, almost a guitar whispering in your ears. When it opened up to exterior scenes where she's hobbling, yet she's living outside and dancing, and then going to fruit stands and vegetable stands in Mexico and picking out fruits. You know, that when the music gets lively, you feel like you actually open the door and feel the fresh air. Thank you. again, the orchestration was very limited to types of music, instruments you can hear in Mexico. And until a European, especially a particularly European gentleman enters the picture, it's just Trotsky. European. As soon as the Trotsky European enters, you hear a string orchestra, and it sounds so different than the Mexican atmosphere that you hear. And also the choice of not my music, but folk music and Mexican compositions that was sung throughout the movie in the different periods, into particular Chavela Vargas, in the hair-cutting scene, La Llorona. Those beautiful choices, you know, really set the music in a way that actual, real Mexicans listened to that stuff, and it was very moving to them, as opposed to, you know, tourist non-Mexicans have an impression of Mexican music.
Yeah.
No sé qué tienen las flores, llorona, las flores del campo santo. No sé qué tienen las flores, llorona, las flores del campo santo. Que cuando las mueve el viento, llorona, parece que están llorando. Que cuando las mueve el viento, llorona, parece que están llorando.
Yeah, it really was an absolute treat to go back and experience that film. It's been so great to get to chat to you both. It really is lovely to get to chat to you together as well, and huge congratulations on this film as well, The Glorias, and I'm very excited to see what's next as well, but yeah, thank you so much for your time. It really is an honor to get to chat to you both. Thank you so much, Julia and Elliot. You take care.
Thank you
guys, stay safe. Thank you, bye. Oh, from the beautiful score to Frida, that's Burning Bed, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Julie Taymor and Elliot Goldenthal. My huge thanks to Julie and Elliot for joining me. The Glorias is available on Sky Cinema now, with Elliot's score available via Zarathustra Music. Head to edithbowman.com to find a link to a Spotify playlist for the show, featuring the music that we play in the order it appears, so you can hear every track in its entirety. We have a playlist for every episode of the podcast. My website is also the place to catch up with all of those other episodes of the podcast and subscribe if you haven't already. We're also on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and also on YouTube, where I put together a regular show featuring the great and good from the world of film, music and TV. Next up, beyond excited to welcome back a guest who has got quite a lot going on at the moment. We could have talked about Cruella. We definitely mention the next series of Succession. We talked at length about his incredible score for his latest Barry Jenkins collaboration. Nicholas Britell is back on Soundtracking next week to talk about working with Barry Jenkins once again on the phenomenal Underground Railroad. Join us and listen to Nicholas Britell on next week's episode. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.